Hello, everybody. It's Eddie. Glad you're with us today. As you guys will see a little further as we progress, I've got a bunch of people in here with me. They're all Titanium members. They're here for an office visit, and as it progresses, we'll maybe open up the floor a little bit and talk about some assets that they've been looking at or some things that kind of been key to what they've talked about. So we'll progress back with that. Mr. Mangan.
Good afternoon, Eddie. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Go by there. You got your door shut all the time. You got a steel in there or something?
I do. I'm hiding in here.
All right. Got Mr. Matt from the boards for us here.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. All right. So, what we got, Matt?
You want to just jump on into it?
Yeah, we'll do our announcements as we progress.
Okay. So, let's get Fred here. Go ahead, Fred. You're good to go.
Hello, Eddie. How are you?
Good, Fred. How are you, sir?
I am well. I'm, as you know, just trying to learn as much as I can. I forget where I pulled this up, but somehow there was a timing conflict in working a non-performing note that you can't do a foreclosure while you're trying to do a loan modification. Can you explain what's involved there and what you can do when, and if you can just start the foreclosure and then put it on hold and then resume it if the modification doesn't work?
I know Mangan is in panic that I'm actually going to say something here. Charles is the guy that lives this every day in the regulatory side of this. What you're referring to is what the industry calls dual tracking.
Right.
Okay, so Charles, kind of go through that, and let's talk about the dimension even of hardest hit funds is related to that.
Well, typically the foreclosure is going to be the last process you really want to start. What you don't want to do is start a foreclosure and then try to mod it or go in there and try to do a modification while it's in a foreclosure process. First step is you want to have the servicer reach out and try to make contact with this borrower. So are you talking about specific NPL that you're currently working?
Well, it's a non-performing loan that we're looking at buying.
Okay.
Just trying to understand what the strategies are.
Well, the first type of strategy that the servicer is going to do, you're going to want your servicer to do is reach out and try to contact the borrower. Find out, is the property occupied, is the borrower still, is it the borrower that's still living in the property, and what type of payments, if any, they can make, or what's their intention? If their intention is to stay in the house and you want to try to work either a modification or a deferment or some type of repayment plan, depending how far behind they are, would depend if you want to try to just work a repayment plan or do a modification or a deferment. But what I wouldn't do is I wouldn't start
modifying, right, Charles?
You
don't like modifying up front.
I don't like modifying up front. If I can defer a borrower, I will. I mean, because I won't, unless I can, I may go in there and say, okay, you pay me 6 monthly payments and then I'll look at modifying. I want some type of commitment that they're going to pay the payments on time.
Fred? You understand what he's saying? In other words, he doesn't want a legal modification in place until he sees skin in the game from the borrower.
Right.
And another reason, because your servicers charge you for loan mods. So when you go in there and you do a loan mod, your servicer is going to charge you for that loan mod. So I want to see some skin in the game. I want to know that they have the ability to pay. If they haven't paid in 2 years, what's proof they're going to pay me? So I definitely want to set that up and work on some type of payment plan up to a modification. So that's really my first process, just trying to work out. Contact the borrower, make sure it's the borrower that's living in the property and get their intent on, what they're going to do. Now then, if they don't, proceed with a repayment plan or any type of deferment, then I will start a foreclosure or a termination process. Sometimes this may wake the borrower up once they realize they're getting ready to be kicked out of their house, and they may reach out and contact your servicer. But I don't start a foreclosure until I know, you know, 100% sure, you know, that they're not returning calls or they have no intentions of answering the phone and while we're trying to work something out with them.
So about how much time do you give them?
You know, well, okay, you know, I'm going to give them probably 60 days, depending on how far behind they are from the time my servicing transfers over. I mean, I tell my servicer that I would want them to try to contact that borrower within the first 30 days that I own the loan. And if you haven't got anything resolved within 60 days, I'm proceeding with the foreclosure.
Is that 30 days after your RESPA required?
Yes.
Dark period?
So it's after the goodbye letter has been completed and the hello letter has been sent out, and then those 30 days after that from active servicing.
Okay.
All right, so Charles, I got a question. So common sense tells me that I got a guy that ain't made a payment in 3 years. You're going and telling him you're going to spank him. He's a little kid that didn't quite believe you.
Right. So if he don't quite believe you, then you're going to start the foreclosure.
But the reason you don't want to foreclosure up front is because you don't want to fire up legal fees.
Right.
Is that what you're thinking is?
Well, and keep in mind, you start that foreclosure, you're right, Eddie, you're going to have legal fees right up front, okay? You could get 90 days into the foreclosure and have legal fees, and they come and make payments. Now they want to make some payments. They want to, you know, go ahead and try to do a modification or a workout on this loan. Had you reached out in the beginning and tried to do this, you would have prevented those foreclosure fees that were not necessary. But, I mean, we always make contact or try to make contact with the borrowers first. I never start a foreclosure right up front.
And can you reference the hardest hit fund question? They have to be at risk of foreclosure, right?
They don't have to be in foreclosure, but they have to be into a delinquency stage. Isn't that correct, Eddie? If they're,
yeah. And it's a little bit tricky, Fred, because so the concept. Well, Charles, define dual tracking.
Well, dual tracking is basically you're not going to be doing a mod and a foreclosure at the same time, or some type of workout and a foreclosure at the same time. You can't do both at the same time. I mean, if you demand...
Initiating in good faith with a modification, you can't be telling the lawyer to put the hammer on the foreclosure.
Correct. And some people think you can continue...
Like a forbearance on the foreclosure?
I'm sorry, what, Eddie?
Initiated foreclosure, do you do some kind of a forbearance?
Some states you can, but again, it's real tricky, so you want to make sure that the attorney does a forbearance agreement that we're going to stop the foreclosure until this process is completed, and if at any time it's not completed, we can proceed or something of that nature. But basically, once you've threatened foreclosure, you know, you can't go in there and say, okay, well, I'm going to let the foreclosure continue to run while I try to do you a modification. You can't do both of them at the same time.
That's called dual tracking.
But there's a variety of time requirements in the foreclosure process, right? Can you start one step and then go into the modification mode so the time is ticking but you're not actively doing anything?
Well, no, if time's ticking, you're doing something. That foreclosure is in process.
Okay.
So, and again, you don't, that loan mod is something you're going to want to try to do up front. You want to try to do all your workout strategies before you start your foreclosure process. Some people think it's, let's go ahead and start the clock, start the foreclosure, and then I'll try to do a deferment, a workout plan. I've even had people say, well, yeah, I've started a foreclosure, but, you know, they've made a payment, and I've got a workout plan with them. Once you accept a payment, that foreclosure is null and void. You cannot continue that foreclosure. You have to start that process over again.
All right. Now, Charles, answer this for me. What if I have said your back payments are due, and the guy sends me, and let's just say it's $10,000, and the guy sends me $3,000. What could I do with that money?
Return that money back to him.
Could I put it in a suspense account?
No. Because once you cash that check, you've accepted some form of payment.
So I can't just hold it hoping he'll send the rest of it.
Right. No, you cannot put it in an escrow account. You cannot put it in a suspense account. You can't just hold the check. You have to either return the check or you have to cash the check.
But we frequently see assets, there's money in the suspense account.
We do, but that's typically if there's money in suspense accounts, it's where there may be an overage in payment. Their payment may have been $550 and they sent $600. So $50 of that goes into a suspense account. And the next month they may only pay $500, and that money that's in suspense could be applied to another payment. So yeah, you'll see that a lot of times. You'll see a lot of times on these pay histories there's unapplied funds. And that's what we see most of the time, it's unapplied funds. And that could be overages in payments where a borrower's making a payment and a half. A lot of times servicers will work out, well, you make a payment and a half every month, and we'll apply those payments as you make a full payment.
So again, with respect to the hardest hit funds, where let's say they have to be 90 days in arrears on their payments, if they make a payment last week but it's for a payment that was due last year, are they still in arrears by more than that 3 months, or is the fact that the payment came in on calendar date yesterday sort of reset that three-month clock?
Well, in a foreclosure, you're saying though they're due for, let's just say they're due for February of 2015, and they make a payment February of 2016, right?
Right, and that payment would get applied against the
February 2015 payment. So they are still delinquent, but as far as hard, you're not talking about hardest hit funds, though. You're talking about foreclosure proceedings, right?
Either or both.
Let's hold off the hardest hit funds at the moment until we kind of clean up what.
So if you had a foreclosure in process and they come in, they make one payment, you voided that foreclosure. Even though they only made one payment, you accepted a payment, you demanded full payment, and you accepted one payment, so now you're starting that foreclosure over again.
All right, so let me clean it up a little bit, Fred. Can I get your question up a little bit?
Go ahead.
Charles, let's say that I have an account that is an owner-occupied property, which is subject to CFPB, right?
Correct.
Okay, subject to CFPB servicing.
Right. Okay.
So now it has to be 120 days delinquent before I can send a notice of default.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's right.
My payment's $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So I owe four, I'm now four payments down. It takes $4,000 to bring the loan current. Boom. 121st day, we send out a notice of default and say you're in default and you owe all of these back payments. What are you going to tell the servicer?
I'm going to tell the servicer, once I send the notice of default, that you owe those four payments. Do not accept anything less than the four payments.
Say that again.
Do not accept anything less than the four payments you demanded.
And if you don't tell your servicer, what might they do?
They might accept that payment, they post that payment whether you like it or not, and you have voided your foreclosure, and now you're going to wait another 120 days to start that foreclosure again.
And Mangan, have you ever seen that happen?
Yeah, all the time.
And again, I have a room full of titaniums, and they're laughing right now. I want you guys to know that because they've all experienced it, believe me.
That's why I always say when you hire the servicer and it's an NPL, make sure you set the expectation with the servicer, and don't think the servicer knows that, because they don't.
You've got
clerical people in there that says, oh boy, they're a payment. Let's get this payment posted, you know. And
don't presume that they're going to do what you would do. Presume they're going to do what you tell them to do.
Now then, servicers, and you always want to, again, set the expectation. Now, servicers are supposed to have their these accounts flagged. So if it comes up and it's flagged as a foreclosure, somebody should walk around and ask a supervisor a question, hey, I got a payment, can I post it? Does that always happen? No, it does not. I mean, we used to fire people for that in our associates' days for not asking the question and posting a payment and voiding a foreclosure. And that was back when it was easy to foreclose. So today, you know, but it still happens every day. So don't ever assume that the servicer knows exactly what they're supposed to do.
All right. That's a good example, Fred, of servicer management. And this is a very common problem. That's why I framed it up the way I did.
Okay.
Okay.
So can a borrower avoid foreclosure indefinitely just by sending you a little money every 119 days?
If you're dumb enough to take it?
So prior to the foreclosure, you instruct your servicer, do not accept what? Any payments less than full payment due? Or?
Well, it's your choice. I mean, here's the deal. First of all, you want to try to work it out. The ultimate goal on an NPL is to get, let's get it performing. So that, I mean, that's the ultimate goal. And, you know, I'll accept a payment every 120 days, but I haven't started a foreclosure on it. But once I start my termination or foreclosure process, I'm not going to accept anything less than the total amount due. I've given them the opportunity to try to work with them, and now they won't come say, can I make a payment? No, sorry, you bring all the payments, and then you can pay them.
All right, but there's an exception to that. And the exception to it is, prior to a modification, you would allow a borrower to start making payments again.
Yes.
Okay, now, so draw the distinction between when you wouldn't accept any money and when you would start accepting payments. So give me an example of both.
Well, and again, a modification, we're trying to, it's a workout. Okay, so if a borrower came in and said, okay, I want to do a modification, then I would come back and say, okay, you know what, I want 4 months' payments. So I want the next 4 months' payments, and on month five, we'll create a modification if you paid your payments on time.
That's because you made a deal with him, and you told him that you were willing to do that.
Correct. Now, then month five, if he's made all of his payments, I create the modification, and then we move forward. If he hasn't followed the plan, then he's going to have to go another 4 or 5 months making payments before I consider a modification.
You see the difference, Fred?
Yes.
In one scenario, you hadn't had any communication with the borrower, and he's just tolling a little money over to you just to see if you'll, you know, start, give him a restart on foreclosure day, right? Kick the can down the road a little bit, right?
Right.
In the other scenario, Mangan was very clear that you've had communication with him, and you said, if you'll do this, I'll start accepting payments, and in good faith, if you'll do it for whatever, 6 months, I'm willing to modify the loan and give you a restart on your loan.
Got it.
Okay. And let me just tell you something. This is it's not a topic that is talked about enough on this call. Is it, Charles? Because we see it all the time. And I know that all these mentor students out there have to see it all the time. So this is not a topic that is discussed enough. That's why I went way down the trail with this today.
That's a very good question, Fred. I appreciate you bringing that on the call today.
All right, let me open up one more small can of worms, Charles.
Okay, Eddie. What you do best?
Okay, so let's say that I'm in a hardest hit fund state.
Okay.
And I've been told in hardest hit funds that I can't do dual tracking. Okay. But wait a minute. I don't know whether the guy's going to get hardest hit funds, and I'm not the guy leading him around getting him the hardest hit funds. So define if I can progress with foreclosure and he can still apply for hardest hit funds. In other words, the application for hardest hit funds, if the lender's in foreclosure, is it turned down? Tell me what you think that means.
Well, Kevin's our expert now, but if a property's in foreclosure, and I have seen a few cases where a property was in a foreclosure and a lender took a service or two and completed, they had them complete the application and got them through the hardest hit funds process. And again, now this is, again, Kevin Shortell is really the expert on these hardest hit funds, but I have seen where a hardest hit funds has pushed back because the loan was already in a foreclosure. So they weren't processing, didn't want to process the application while the foreclosure was in the process. So if you're, the best way to do it is you need to talk to the hardest hit funds in that state and figure out exactly what their qualifications are for this app, for applying for hardest hit funds. I wouldn't start a foreclosure process. I'll just be honest with you. I wouldn't start a foreclosure process until I talk to the hardest hit funds.
All right. I got one more question about this. So years ago, Charles, you know, it was a standard operating procedure with all of us that we would get in a state with a lengthy foreclosure process, and if we got down the road and we wanted to accept money, or we got down the road and there was something like a hardest hit funds, which there wasn't years ago, but let's just say it was a something, right? Some right. kind of a government assistance program or delinquent borrower assistance program, right?
Right.
And let's say that we progress with it, then we used to whip out the old forbearance agreement mm-hmm. and stop the foreclosure but not lose our place in line.
Right.
Okay, meaning that if we were 5 months into a foreclosure process that took a year, then if we had to start and reinitiate foreclosure, we didn't start at the beginning of the line. We started back at that five-month window we were at.
Correct.
Okay. Can you still do that?
You can. In most states, Eddie, you can still do that. you know, I mean, I have come, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. I had a foreclosure sale set up last month, or actually this month, as a matter of fact, and had a question regarding the bid amount. I did a forbearance, basically pushed the sale to another month. I didn't take it through sale this month, and I pushed the foreclosure sale to March.
Why'd you do that?
Because it had to do with a lien on the property, and we were trying to get a clarification on these liens, and I didn't want to take that title yet until I could confirm this lien on this property.
Okay.
So basically, I just moved my sale to another month. I did a forbearance and pushed it out 30 days.
Okay, so I know that, like, Kevin's done a lot more research on hardest hit funds than you and I, and done more case studies on the people that have done it, but is it your understanding I possibly could do a forbearance if somebody was applying for hardest hit funds?
Again, I talked to the hardest hit funds and see if a forbearance was necessary. You know, I mean, if you're in, you know, if you've got, you're only a few months into the foreclosure process, you're going to get the hardest hit funds application processed before that foreclosure comes to fruition. So you may be okay just to continue to run the hardest hit funds until you are, I mean, until, you know, until it's completed before the foreclosure is completed is what I'm saying. But again, you need to talk to the hardest hit funds and just make sure that a foreclosure proceeding can be in the process while they're making application.
Okay. All right. So, Matt, let's look at the board. I think, Charles, you have covered a good bit of this. Timetable, I think you've kind of defined that as far as triggering events and how long you'd wait before you progressed. You're saying you would probably look at about a 60-day window from when the right to make contact with the borrower before you would progress with foreclosure.
Right.
Budgeting, how much you'd budget for legal cost and foreclosure. I think that's just simply a matter of finding out what state you're in, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not a one-size-fits-all shoe.
No.
How to prevent the borrower from wasting your time, collect payments. Good thing, Beth, is none of Charles's customers have ever wasted his time. It's a very effective.
It's a perfect world, Beth. It doesn't happen. Okay. Doesn't happen. So just come back around the customer. If they make a promise and they don't keep that promise, then you know what, they're not serious. I'll give them a couple of chances, Beth, and then if they don't, If they don't follow through what they say they're going to do, I'm done. Okay, party's over.
I wrote a book about seller financing. Gosh, it's been how long, man? And I wrote it in 03. That's been 13 years now. Can you believe that?
That's been a long time.
I wrote a book called Streetwise Seller Financing, and some of you have never read it. It's actually a pretty good little book. It doesn't talk about Dodd-Frank or SAFE Act because it wasn't in effect back then. But it does talk about a collection technique that anybody that's ever come through a collection center or a consumer finance world, it's called PCA. There's Matt's got one, Streetwise Seller Finance. And Matt, did you have that under your pillow, bud?
I've got that one in the new one, sir.
He reads it every night, Eddie.
You read that heavily before she goes to sleep, right?
It's a good page turner, I'll tell you what.
Anyway, in that book, I talk about permanent corrective action, PCA. Charles Mangan would tell you that nobody's ever worked for a consumer finance company that hadn't been taught that concept.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly what he just said. You ask the borrower for a commitment, they make a commitment, and if they can't honor the commitment, they make contact with you. If they're ducking you, if they're riding you, you presume they're going to be lying to you.
Right. That's a good point. And Sylvia, I did ask a question, Eddie. Is a deferment the same as a forbearance agreement? So a deferment's a little bit different than forbearance. A deferment is where you may make a payment arrangement with a borrower to say they're due. They may be 4 or 5 months behind. You say, okay, I'm going to accept 2 payments, and I'm going to defer those 3 payments to the end of your note. So it's not a forbearance because you're basically you're deferring the payments. You're moving those 3 payments to the end of the note. Sylvia, you're not, as we're modification, you're modifying the terms. A deferment, you're just pushing that payment to the end of those payments to the end of the note, so they're going to owe 3 more payments at the end of that note. So, but yeah, the deferment and forbearance are 2 different things.
All right, so Mangan, I got a room full of folks here.
Wow, Eddie, they all came to see you. Yeah. Hi, everybody.
I don't even know if we can show everybody at this point. You guys got
any? Michael sitting on the couch, and I see that deer over him.
Yeah.
I got my California friend sitting right underneath that big gun there. I want you to know that. So.
Right, there's Lisa.
I'll take you back with him. I'm not even sure that gun's legal in California. Is that good? Is everybody?
No, let's go back to the right, Eddie. We need to see everybody on the other side.
Yeah, all right, well, let's see. All right,
there's everybody. There's Mahmood and Brooks, and we got a bunch of people here, Eddie. Yep. It's actually been a great week.
All right, Michael, what do you got?
Is it always raining in Dallas?
No. Always raining. It hadn't rained here in, like, how long, Mangan?
Six weeks. We haven't had rain since the last time you were here, Michael. bringing the rain here, Michael.
I don't think it's rained here since the 1st of January any measurable amount of rainy days. But anyway, we hadn't had much winter in about the last 3 weeks, but a little bit more wintry today. So, all right, everybody good with all that stuff? Mahmood, you've dealt deep in that space, managing the servicer, collecting payments, trying to set their expectations ahead of time. Good. Yeah. All right.
So, Mangan.
All right, Mangan.
Charles.
Hi, I'm sorry. Yeah, Matt.
So, could you clear something up? When you're talking about taking about 5 payments of someone's amount due, are you saying that you're going to give them, say they say, all right, look, we can do a modification, but instead of 500, we can pay 400. Are you saying they have to pay the 500 in order to get the new modification rate? Or are you saying you would take what they could pay on the modification terms? And if they pay, then you're going to.
Well, I mean, you're talking about if I offer to do a modification with them.
And before you actually sign the new modification with them, you say, I'm going to at least take a little skin in the game of payment-wise. Is that the
I mean, I want them to show me that they can make the payments. Okay, so before I agree to accept a modification, I want to make sure that they can make the payments.
Okay.
I mean,
was that Robin's question, Matt?
I was kind of just reading through some stuff, but
yeah. So Robin, if you might look at Robin's question here. Basically, she's just I think we get into like what's the judgment call here, and you know, it just gets into how much you believe that, you know, a little bit of a kickstart will help your borrower versus, you know, are they manipulating you? And it's not a personal thing. You're not trying to it's just a matter of, you know, they owe the money and you got to believe that they have the ability and the desire to pay you back. Right, Charles?
Right. And Robin's saying that, you know, she's tired. She's got a borrower that's paying, you know, 1.5 payments every 60 to 90 days. And then she gets ready to start the foreclosure, and they run in and make another payment and a half. Just keep in mind, Robin, you don't have to take that payment. You can take that borrower and say, look, buddy, I'm done with 1.5 payments. We're never catching up this way. We either get caught up or we'll foreclose. I mean, it's, you know, you can only do that for so long. And you'll finally get tired of that game, and it is. It's just a game, you know, and if he's only making 1.5 payments every 90 days, he's not going to catch it up.
Oh, the answer is, Robin, we've all been there, okay? I used to have a customer, his name was Ray. I'll never forget, he called me up and he said, oh, my God. His file stayed on my credenza for 10 years. 10 years. Because he always had an excuse and is always this and that. And finally one day he says, Eddie, I'm going to come by and bring some money. Now, that ain't all that I owe. And I said, don't come by. He goes, what? I said, don't come by. I'm not going to take any money but what you owe. And I've worked with you long enough. I've worked through some bad times, but 10 years is too long for me. And you know, so we've all been there by somebody that you think you're helping, and it's just like their bad luck never stops. Now, some people's bad luck does stop, and we're not saying don't stop working people. You just got to make a judgment call.
Right.
Let's see, Beth saying, well, Beth, it depends on what the, you know, have you modified the loan yet? If you've told the customer you're willing to accept less than the contract payment even before you modify them, that's what you told the customer you'd do. If you modify the loan and you make the payment less than what the original contract payment was, that's what the modification says. You're just not legally required to accept less than what they owe unless you're willing to accept it. Is that a fair statement, Charles?
Yeah. And Robin had also made a comment here. I don't feel that I can mod because this customer's rate is only 4.5% based on the mod. I mean, when you mod a loan, it doesn't mean you have to adjust the rate lower. I mean, you can – a lot of times people mod to add the arrearages onto the note. They may not necessarily adjust the interest rate or anything. That interest rate may be the same. They just may extend the term back to 30 years and – keep the same rate. They're just, what they're doing is this borrower has the ability to pay now. So since his borrower has the ability to pay, he, you know, you can modify the loan. You don't really necessarily have to give them a lower rate. So just keep that in mind.
All right, Mr. Matt, great little tap topic there. Let's go to the next one.
All right. So we've got Chris. I'll pull him in. Go ahead, Chris. I think you have yourself muted. If you want to unmute yourself, you'll be good to go.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Hey, Chris. What's up, buddy?
Hey. Well, I got a little bit of a mess on my hands in a little town called Anderson, Indiana. So I purchased this non-performing note advertised as owner-occupied. You see the prices there, 24,185, UPB 39, BPO was 49,000. 10% interest rate. So by the time I got to contacting the borrower, they were no longer there, and the house was a mess. So the current BPO puts the after-repaired value at $36,000. I've been using, I start off using Nations Property Solutions to go in there and secure the place and give me a bid, but I've got bids from three or four contractors ranging from $13,000 on the low end to $33,000 on the high end. Got about another, $2,400 in it. So, you know, even if the low bid was accurate and nothing else comes up, you know, I'm going to be into this thing $40,000 before it's ready to do anything with.
Okay, first thing, Chris, throw that BPO away.
Okay.
Throw that BPO away. This is your original BPO here?
Yeah, okay. The one that had about 49. Yeah, that was the original one. Yeah.
Okay. So, Chris, what if you bought it and aimed it? What could you sell it for?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. So more than what the BPO says, if you believed it.
No, we didn't, because that realtor doesn't know a flipping thing about owner financing.
Chris, what is this rent for? Did I not see a rent for $800 a month?
You know, I didn't. Sorry, I had a rental. I didn't put a rental number on there.
Owner, Chris, Eddie Speed 101. Okay. Mm-hmm. If it's less than $60,000, those BPOs are going to be cash sales. Okay? Can I likely sell it for more than the BPO?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Then once again, that's why he's saying if its rental value is $800, we're dancing.
Okay.
Matt, where's that calculator to help figure out what you could owner finance it for?
Pulling it up right now.
Is that the 50-50 calculator?
Oh. Talking about the NOI. That's a calculator to figure out if you sold it to a consumer based on its rentable value, how much could you owner finance it for? All right, so make it a little bigger there, Matthew. All right, so did you say the rentable value was 800?
Yeah, let's go with that. Let me see if I think I've got that information here somewhere.
I just seen that on the report. It said $800.
Oh, it did? Okay. Let's see what I got here. I don't have a value in my notes here.
Yeah, I would say that assume your insurance on that's going to be about $35 or $40. Do $40, Matt. Take out the management fee. That's a cap rate calculator, Matt. That's different. Going to be different than the owner finance calculator. You mean the owner finance calculator that I built with Zarina?
Gotcha.
What do we call that calculator, Matt?
I don't think it really has a name yet. It's Eddie's new calculator is what I have on here. Is the
Y'all remember that, Eddie's new calculator.
All right, well, let's Eddie's owner finance model calculator or something. Tell us we're going to come up with something smart, and this needs to make sure it's on the site. I think it already is. Oh. Insurance. Yeah, that might be a little light on the insurance. Well, that's a lot on the taxes. $40 a lot on the taxes. Assume, yeah, that's probably more realistic. Yeah. All right, do you see where I'm going here with this, Chris?
Yeah, I'm looking at it, yeah.
All right, so if I carried this deal at 30 years, look at column one. Mm-hmm. If I carried 30 years at 10% interest, I could finance $78,000.
Okay. So this is to a consumer.
That's to a consumer, and okay. Once again, you know, you do a down payment. I'm just saying, if your customer that is owning this house is going to make a down payment, and then their mortgage payment is no more than their rent payment.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yep, I'm in. That's what I wanted to hear.
I'm not saying that Mangan and I are agreeing that you need to spend the $13,000. We're just saying we're agreeing that BPO is trash.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry. That BPO, I would toss that in a heartbeat. Chris. I'm just going to tell you right now. Eddie, on this calculator, okay. I ask you on your new handy-dandy calculator here, under other, should there be a management fee in there?
No.
Can do that? Okay.
No. I mean, that's the customer's monthly payment.
Okay, okay.
I'm getting to the $685 looking to apply for P&I. Okay. Matt, make sure we get this calculator a proper name and we let everybody know where it's at.
I'm looking on the website now just to make sure she didn't put it on there. So as we were talking.
I think she probably already has, but we've talked about it. Is that helpful for you guys to see that, by the way?
That's helpful for me.
All right.
All right, that's what I need. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right, let's know what happens. This would probably be an NAA type scenario.
Sorry, what type scenario?
National Asset Advisors. I mean, this is kind of their space.
Right.
The one
right.
thing I'd really like to do is you know see if you could hold out for a good solid down payment.
Mm-hmm.
Do the old owner financing with large down payment for deserving buyer kind of thing, and. Right. They can hold out for a little higher down payment. I see a lot of people selling assets like this, and they get, you know, $7,000 to $9,000, $10,000 down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if this one had had a down payment from the previous owner, it probably wouldn't be like this. They wouldn't have walked away from it.
No, I mean it's hard to say. I mean, you know, it things happen, but
yeah,
you know, I would say that, and the other thing I would do is, you know, they have a management piece, and they might look at that contract with you, Charles. It's not even conceivable you'd saw back what they had the contractor do, right?
On this deal?
Yeah, well, he says he's got a $13,000 bid from a contractor. Might saw back what you had the contractor do.
Hmm.
Yeah. Do we have that bid?
Yeah, there's one of them in there, yeah. It's the one that probably says handyman in the title.
I think Matt's pulling that up.
So the price is really irrelevant, the end price. It's really about what the consumer can afford to pay.
Right. You're going to sell that. You're going to sell the payment.
Yeah, okay.
I've got two bids up here. One estimate. What exactly?
I'm just curious. Are the bids 13 to 33? Are they about the? Are they the same? Doing the same amount of work?
No, they're different prices and different scope. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this one totals up to about. I don't know if that one. Actually, this is actually the BPO through Nations Property Solution. That is the realtor putting in prices. So this one I just kind of threw out immediately.
Oh my gosh, did I see mold fungus?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
And you could go buy a $2 bottle of bleach and get rid of that fungus.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the expensive one.
Replace all windows.
Yeah. I don't think I'd be worrying about that. Painting.
Yeah.
Chris, this is Tim. That wasn't my guy, was it?
No, you know, let's see, Tim, your guy never called me back, Tim. I'm sorry. He was either the guy that didn't call me back or told me to burn it to the ground and call the fire department. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, they're a little high there. They're a little high, Chris.
Yeah, there's one in there labeled handyman, and that's the guy that's running about $13,000.
Okay. Well,
anyway.
I mean, you're good on this deal. Again, you know, many times we look at these BPOs and we think, oh, gosh, I'm going to break even on this deal if I have to go spend all mm-hmm. that money. Guys, you can't look at the BPO as this is what you're going to sell it for because that's...
All right, look, Tim's here in the office with us this week. Let him see if he can bang your guy around a little bit.
Sure.
And then secondly, just looking at these numbers, Charles, it looks like to me that I don't know what the story is, but to look at this house and think you're going to replace all the windows, I'm not totally sure why you're doing that.
Yep.
And then again, you know, a lot of times these contractors go out there and they bid everything, I mean, to put it in top quality, brand new order. That's not what you want. You want it to go, you want it make ready, or you want it livable, or you want it ready. Okay, but many contractors, especially preservation providers, you know, they're going to give you a bid for everything.
Right.
And Chris, just to be clear, I mean, you're saying, well, you know, it's, you know, when you buy it, you think it's owner occupied. You know, you're buying a delinquent note. You just,
yeah.
And you, I'm not saying you've been hoodwinked. I'm just saying you just, you know, you just operate with the best information you can sometimes.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Would you rather have a property owner-occupied or renter-occupied?
I'd rather have it owner-occupied.
Okay. Why do you say that?
Owner mentality. Take care of it.
Well, I'm talking about a loan that's not paying.
Oh, well. Yeah. I'm not sure about that one.
I mean, this, you see what I'm saying?
No, I'm not following you, Eddie. Renter versus owner on a non-performing.
What is this asset?
It's in the process. It's on a land contract, so... You know, with Charles' advice, I still have to terminate the land contract. So that's in process.
Okay.
The motion's been filed or whatever it is.
Is the house still occupied or is it vacated?
Oh, no, it's completely empty.
You got it.
There's some pretty good pictures in one of there's some pretty good pictures in one of those files.
You secured it, winterized it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't start any repairs till your termination is completed.
When you say pretty good pictures, you mean they left all the kids' toys?
Well, just showing the condition of the property inside, all the stuff and the, you know, the debris and the mold and all that kind of stuff.
Is there a lot of mold in the house, Chris? Just curious.
Yeah, there's quite a bit.
So two bottles of bleach.
I'm not sure if that's the one that's got, yeah, that's got some of the stuff in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bad looking house on the outside till you went inside.
Yeah, but nothing low cosmetic work won't clean up. I mean, it'll clean right up nicely, Chris.
Chris, Magnum's probably working on 100,000 foreclosures. He ain't seen that one that they swept on the way out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's part of kind of just knowing that all these assets we've ever looked at, that's just kind of what they look like. And that doesn't mean that there can't be a bomb in any of them. It just means, you know, on the surface it all does. And I hate to tell you this, but every daggum realtor we ever sent out there, they go out there and take a picture of the couch like they're shocked that people left their couch.
Right,
must be a pretty good neighborhood, Chris.
Yeah.
Because the unit's still intact.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, what I would do, I'd start trying to stir up neighbors and see if there's a buyer.
Yeah, right. Okay. Hey, on another topic, my Cook County foreclosure, I finally got that property 14 months later. So, anyway.
Was the property must have been occupied.
It was, yeah. It was the full-blown foreclosure, and finally got the guy out and got the deed, and so we're moving on with that one. And he left it, and although he left a bunch of shit behind, it's not damaged.
He left a bunch of stuff at the house.
Yep.
I'm kind of poking with you, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but he didn't trash it on the way out. He when he was moving from there to the trailer park, he didn't have as much room, so he just left it. No problem.
You know exactly. You know why people that get foreclosed on leave all their furniture in the house, the kids' toys?
Yeah.
Because they can't move it in with the brother they just moved in with.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously. So anyway.
Yeah.
What's it cost a yard to move that stuff, Megan?
Anywhere from about $35 to $45 a yard, cubic yard, up to $50.
What a typical 1,400 square foot house? How many yards would it take to move people's junk?
Well, it just depends how much junk it is.
I know, but take the average.
Cubic yard, you're probably looking at, if they're trashy people, you could be looking at 30 cubic yards, 25, 30 cubic yards.
Yeah, the quote I had 50 in the Cook County one is what they said. So,
well, I had guys. I just bought a house in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I had one bid for about 55 cubic yards for about it was like $6,000-$7,000 for a trash out property. Jeez. And then I got another bid from a guy and a local guy that I found and. He charged me $1,000 to trash out the house. And that was including the dumpster.
Yeah, right.
So.
Shop around.
You know, you can get two bids, and somebody can go out there and bid at 50, and then you get another bid, and it's 30. So some of these people are not real good on their measurements of cubic yards.
Right.
Hey, Charles.
All right. I got to do my disclaimer here, okay? So about 40% of all mentor students are licensed realtors. You know that, don't you, Mangan?
No, I didn't know there was 40%. I knew we had a lot of realtors.
Okay, so when I talk about realtors not being able to sell a house with owner financing, it's realtors right. In the note school. Everybody clear about that?
It's not our note school realtors, right?
It's untrained in seller finance realtors.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. So don't get your feelings hurt. We're an equal opportunity offender here. They are.
Hey, Charles.
Yeah.
Talking about your trash out process, I had a bid on one out in Georgia that I'm doing, and the bid was about $2,500, and I found the dumpster. Contact people and found somebody, and he gave me a discount, and he has somebody who's going to do it for $1,000. So basically, I just called him, the people who own the dumpster place, and they can get it cheaper than they can anywhere else because they get it at 30 cents on the dollar to rent it as opposed to the other. And he had one of his cousins, and they're going to do it for $1,000 as opposed to $25. So just
how'd you find the guy that owned the dumpster place, Matthew?
I just called the dumpster place. No, I'm kidding. It was one.
Did you pick up your receiver and say, dial the dumpster place?
No, I mean, I Googled it and looked at it and found some places. I don't know, just kind of looked around in that area. So.
There's on occasion you can go to Craigslist, you can find Angie's List, you can find these guys out there. You know, but on the flip side, I've done that and got higher bids than I did through my preservation companies. So.
I will tell you guys this, that when you are out there digging around in this, something that you guys should be doing to help each other is you've got the forum, and this kind of stuff is like great topics for the forum.
Good point.
I know you've been on the forum and answered a lot of questions on there. So there's a lot of opportunities. There for you guys to do stuff like that. Okay, we wrap it up here, Matthew?
I think so. Let me check the board. I knew we had a hand raised earlier, but let me double check because I don't see it up now. So let me just check real quick. I don't see the hand up anymore. So
okay. All right, let's go over our events here really quick.
All right.
Okay, Titanium students, we are having the Titanium Mastermind. It will be at the American Airlines Training Center right outside of DFW Airport in Dallas. We'll have an evening social on April the 14th, and we're gonna have the Mastermind all day on April 15th and April 16th. Now, everybody knows that you should have already filed your extension for your taxes, Mangan. So don't show up there and say, I got to go to the post office on the 15th.
Ah, yeah. You don't have to follow them.
It's a little tax trick, okay? It's only cost me about several hundred thousand bucks. If you will wait and file an extension and file your actual return in October, the odds of getting audited go way, way, way down, Mr. Mangan.
Really?
Just in case they want to know something like that.
Okay.
Okay? Just saying. That's what I'm told.
That's what you're told. All right.
Not that being audited would be bad, because you would just show them that you're being totally honest when you get on audited. It's just the aggravation. We are going to take them to the Rangers baseball game. They're going to pay the Orioles. And I saw the Rangers on TV last night, Mang, and I, according to them, they're going to be on fire this year.
That's what they say.
They wouldn't lie about that.
No.
And then we're going to have a cookout one night. So that's for the Titaniums. Matthew, there is a registration process. Everybody should have gotten an email. So as Bob said yesterday to our Titanium students here, if you don't have it, it's in your junk box. But for some reason, if you don't have it, you can go to noteschool.com/titanium. And that's a registration process. If for some reason you don't have your email and you want information or you want to register, you can email Angie here at and is that Note School, Bob? Did you have Note School or is that Colonial?
That's Colonial. And Angie's email is at Colonial. I'm gonna check it right now. Confirm.
Angie at ColonialFundingGroup.com?
Yes, it's correct.
The Woodbury said they're going to wear their Kansas City Royal blue. I don't know what to say about that. I'll tell you one thing. That's a faithful bunch. You see that picture? About 900,000 people.
And
when the Royals had their celebration, that's pretty incredible. So I want to make sure everybody knows how to do that. You get Angie's email address again. If you're a Titanium, you want to come, you should be able to go to noteschool.com/titanium, and that should be your page. You can email Angie R@ColonialFundingGroup.com, and she'll get it to you. Now, we are officially sending the email out for Summer Summit. I think Susan's going to have it ready to roll here this week. But right now, I want you to save the date. It starts June the 3rd. It'll be June the 3rd and June the 4th. It will also be at the American Airlines training facility, which is right outside the DFW airport. And on June the 2nd, we're going to have a special one-day class, and all the money for this goes to the Child Welfare Board. Dykes Botiford, great, smart dude that anybody that's ever been to his training will assure you of that. And he is doing a training on entity creation and tax management and asset protection of it. He's a very smart guy. Jeff Watson it recommended that he teach this class. And I know that any of you that have ever been around Dykes or any of his disciples like Jeff Watson or Walter Wolford or David Phelps or on and on and on would tell you what an incredible smart guy he is. So we're honored to have him come in and teach this, and then we're going to load everybody up and take them to the Fort Worth Stockyards, and you're going to have a free dinner, compliments of the Child Welfare Board. Okay? $250 per primary, and secondary will be $200. So we lowered the price, Charles, so everybody could participate. This is an optional day, but it is a bolt-on to the Summer Summit. Okay? You got a friend that would like to come to a class, we're going to have a class the same time, Richard Ward's class, and that's going to be the 3rd through the 5th. Okay? What else, Matt? Oh, if you're interested in the couple little things, the hog hunt or Martha's Mastermind, this is outside of the mentoring thing, but there's a little box on the opening screen of your membership site, and you can click on there, and there's a little webinar that we taped, and it'll give you the information. So if you're wanting to do the Ladies Mastermind with Martha, you can learn about that, or if you're wanting to do the hog hunt with us. All right. Got a bunch of classes we've just scheduled, so you guys can pay attention to the schedule that there'll be. We've just added several classes from now to, end of July, I believe. So they'll be going up here on the screen here in a day or so. We are starting to do a lot with Facebook. A lot with Facebook. And so there should be a lot of interaction with Facebook and a lot of good information on Facebook that you can like and that you can forward and use for your own social media. So we are spending a good bit of money with a social media guy, and Kevin and I and the whole team of folks are working at adding a lot of content. So it should be something of great value. Okay? Yep, Robin Jackson said, you can't go wrong with Dykes. He's a great speaker, and you are correct, Robin. Okay, that it?
That's it, yes.
All right. Mr. Mangan, you be good.
I'm going to, Eddie.
Y'all have a good day.
I'll see you in a minute.